Welcome to a new episode of The Influence Factor by The Influencer Marketing Factory. Today with me, we have Avi Gandhi, that is the founder of Partner with Creators and also the writer of the Creator Logic newsletter. Before we get started, I want just to remind you that every Wednesday, I interview fantastic people that talk about influencer marketing, the creator economy, social commerce, and much more. If you want to be updated on, you know, new episodes, just subscribe on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Enjoy the show. Hey, Avi, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Alessandro? Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Fantastic. I started the week very productive, so a lot of energy. And a lot to have you here because, you know, you have a lot of knowledge, right, in the industry. I was just rereading your bio, and you have a lot of, titles under your, as an online persona, right? Like a writer, advisor, entrepreneur in the creator economy. You are a LinkedIn top voice. You have now a new weekly newsletter called Creator Logic, right? So I want to know more about that. But just as a brief intro to people listening today, who is Avi? How did you start it? And what it's, what are you up to lately?
Sure. So I've been in the creator economy for longer than it's been called the creator economy. I actually came in on the Hollywood side. So I was one of the first talent agents in the space, representing YouTube creators, Vine creators back in the day. So that should give you a sense of how long I've been doing this. Whatever other platform you can think of, I've probably worked with a creator from that platform. And so I was an agent until 2016. And then since then, I've held every relevant role in the space. I've been a talent manager. I've been a founder. I've been a producer. Up until last summer, I was the head of creator partnerships at Patreon. So have been an executive in the space as well. Today, I am consulting with creator economy companies and companies that want to be working with creators more closely, so companies like Discord. And I am also writing my newsletter, Creator Logic, which launched actually last week. So pretty excited about that. I'll be talking to creators about their businesses, about how they make decisions, going through kind of all of the various tools and platforms and partners they have and the underlying logic behind.
That's great. Yeah, I think that I saw that. It was like a breakdown, right, with Gigi Robinson, right?
Yes. So Gigi Robinson was the first guest. I actually just interviewed Greg Priest today, but we've got a bunch of great guests coming. Jay Klaus, Tejas Fuller, Bryce Adams from OnlyFans. So it's going to be a pretty broad spectrum of creators from across a bunch of different platforms, breaking down where's their audience coming from, what are their revenue sources, and how do they break out, and which audience platform is actually driving those revenue sources. And then we get into kind of more granular detail around, what are the various tools that they use for everything from production to project management and brand management, who are the partners that they work with or the platforms that they work with, and why did they choose them over others? In Gigi's case, she has a team of seven. She's not represented for her brand business. Why does she have an assistant doing her brand deals instead of an agent or manager? Why does she have a manager for speaking but not brands? Why does she use Riverside instead of Zencastr? Which is a question I can ask you, actually. I'm very curious about that answer as well. So, digging into, there's so many products out there, and there's more and more coming out that are trying to make the world easier for creators, make the world better for creators. And so trying to understand which ones are actually resonating, why are they resonating, why are creators making the choices that they're making? I think that'll be beneficial for both creators to understand from other creators who are full-time and sort of making it. And also valuable for creator economy companies to understand as they try to position their products, as they try to build for creators and understand how creators think and make decisions.
Love it. Yeah. When I saw the breakdown, I was like, okay, finally, this is really detailed. And funny enough, it was about, again, Gigi Robinson that I actually interviewed on the podcast that, that the episodes have still to go live. But I can see that, there are certain people that we all know in the industry, we'll know all each other's after a while, right? Because it's still it's getting bigger, but it's somehow still a niche, right? It's interesting to see how, you can really look at the creator economy with a lens that looks at that in a professional way, understanding that nowadays content creators are becoming companies, right? They don't look at themselves as brand promoters just anymore, but actually there is such so much more. So I really love to see that breakdown because it was so in-depth in the details. And I can see, I think it's one of the first time that I see something like that. So absolutely good luck with the, you know, with the new newsletter. I'm pretty sure that, especially nowadays, people are reading more, right? I would say we are seeing like an opposite, right? From short form, people want to go more in detail. So that's absolutely interesting to see. And you're also really active on LinkedIn. And that's why on today's episode, I actually collected many information from the past weeks. And you know, what I love to do in this podcast is go like really on practical, right, tips that people can get activated on. And the first one that I saw actually is that you selected three uncertainties, right, that you say that keep creators up at night, right? And you said two of them, I'm going to just tell them here and then please, like, you know, go, you know, like just tell us a bit more about either what does it mean and also if you find any solution for them, right? And there are three of them. One is the distribution uncertainty. So it's mostly like, how will my content perform? The second one is income. And it's like, will I be able to pay my bills this month, right? So it's, you know, it's, we all been so bad, right? Very difficult, right? Up and down every time. And then the longevity and, you know, uncertainty. So how long will this last? Let's start with the first one, distribution. What is the best way nowadays? There are so many new options. Again, ups and downs in the market, the new features. What would be the best advice for content creators and also potentially for some brands that want to use content creators for their own content on social media?
Sure. I love this format, by the way, because like obviously LinkedIn is like a short form, you know, it's like writing, but like there's only so much I can write, so now I can go deep into it. I think from a distribution uncertainty perspective, right, it's like creators have no control if they're using social media platforms, because social media platforms and distribution on social media platforms largely governed by algorithms. So if you post on TikTok or on YouTube or even on LinkedIn, I feel this pain myself, actually. The algorithm will, for that platform, will look at infinite, who knows how many variables and sort of calculate, okay, we think these people will like this and they'll send it to them. And, you know, if it thinks fewer people will like it, it'll send it to fewer people. It thinks more people will like it, it'll send it to more people. And you just don't know. You know, I have this, maybe I'll do a post on this one day, but I have this kind of philosophical musing that, like, we kind of live at this age of, like, digital gods, right? Like, the algorithms are, they're like gods, right? Even the people that made them don't know how they work anymore and can't really, interpret them. You know, we're all just trying to please these fickle gods so that they deliver the harvest, you know? And so how do you deal with that? I think first off, like lots of people try to play the algorithm. They try to learn and understand the algorithm, and you can do that. And but algorithms change. In fact, they change quite a bit. And so something that worked today will not work tomorrow, potentially. And you just don't know. This is like some pain that I've had recently, right? Like in some, LinkedIn made some algorithm change in February, and overnight, my readership went down by almost half. And I'm still trying to figure out, how do I get back? You know, I was averaging 6,000-8,000 readers per post, and now I'm at like 3,000-4,000 almost. Which is a bummer, but you know, that's the game. So how do you actually combat that? You have to a lot of people would say own your audience, but I actually don't think that you necessarily need to own your audience. What you need is a way to communicate with the people who care the most about you directly, right? So think about your business as a funnel. Like the social media is the top of the funnel. It's discovery. It's where people are going to find you. But not all of those people are actually going to care enough to buy something from you or watch everything that you make, or, you know, they're casually interested. The people that really matter are the ones who really care, who want to see all the things. You want the people who want to see all your content and potentially purchase from you to be separate from this algorithm that may or may not show them your post. You want to be able to reach them directly. And so there's a bunch of ways to do that. Email is kind of like the, you know, best known, most talked about, but I think there's an emerging sort of group of creators who are starting to launch communities, and that's another way to do it, right? Using like Discord or Slack or Circle or Nas.io or WhatsApp, Telegram, like any of these platforms that let people join like a group where they can chat with each other, but also with the creator, and where the creator can leave comments, pin, you know, messages, you know, and is in more control of the group and also who sees what. That's kind of the, I think, the solution for distribution uncertainty. And you're not going to reach as many people, and no one's going to discover you through this, right? So you still need social and algorithms as the top of the funnel, but you need to drive those people that find you on social into this either community or newsletter or both, if you have that kind of time and willingness to like then be able to reach the fans who matter the most to you, to get them to watch your stuff, to sell to them.
Hey, quick break. This podcast is hosted by the Influencer Marketing Factory. We are an influencer marketing agency that helps brands and companies engage with Gen Z and millennials on social media. We take care of influencer identification, storytelling, creativity, negotiation, contracting, campaign management, ROI analysis, in-depth reporting, content boosting, and much, much more. Are you interested in learning more? You can find us at theinfluencermarketingfactory.com, or you can Google The Influencer Marketing Factory.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We talked about this also in another episode about the difference between having a community and an audience, right? You can have a great audience. It doesn't mean that it's going to convert definitely like, you know, to a community necessarily, or also how you can use an audience mostly to drive in to a community, and that the community is actually going to be the one giving you more stability, right, on a monthly basis. That is actually the second part, right? The second question here, that is the income. So like, you know, will I be able to pay my bills this month, right? That is a question for a lot of people, not just for who is starting, but also for people that maybe have been doing for many years. But as you just said, because of the algorithm, because 1 month there are not enough brand deals, because 1 month they're not doing enough money with media rights and so on. There's always this like, you know, a sort of, you know, like, what should I do? Should I increase my opportunities with different, like, you know, revenue streams? Should I go all in with one? What is your pieces of advice when it comes to income?
Yeah, I think, first off, like, there's no such thing as stability, right? Even, you know, salaried employees today are finding that out, right? With hundreds of thousands of people getting laid off. And so... But there's levels of stability. There's levels of predictability, right? So what's less predictable? Brand deals. Like brand, especially if you're relying on inbound brand deals. Like, all right, like maybe you get 5 emails this month from brands that want to sponsor your content, and maybe you get none. Like you have no control over that, right? That's luck, basically. Then like a bit more predictable is probably like YouTube ad revenue. Like it's still driven by an algorithm. So like there's going to be big swings and fluctuations depending on how well your content performs, but at least there's some little thing to a lot of money coming in every month, right? What's more predictable than that? Membership, right? Like subscriptions, like people were paying you month in and month out. Now, yes, there's going to be churn there, but as long as you're consistently promoting that, you can kind of, balance that churn, and you kind of know what direction that's going, and it's more stable, right? But like, is there anything that's really truly stable, right? No. And so what's the solution? What's the way that you create that kind of freedom and liberate yourself from that uncertainty? It's probably diversification. It's probably having a few different streams so that if one performs poorly, you still have the others to lean back on, and vice versa. So you're not, you know, as they say, all your eggs in one basket. Like it's that kind of classic analogy.
Worst. And have you found anything talking with content creators or just like, you know, checking around statistics? Is there anything, because usually brand deals are the ones a bit easier, I would say, right, to bring in. But is there a number 2, top 3 that you identified as some other additional revenue stream for majority of content creators? Could be, I don't know, like, is it merch? Is it media rights? Is it... paid subscription for exclusive content?
I mean, there's... So I actually think that probably like ad rev share from like YouTube, for example, for video creators or podcasters, is among the highest. Membership is growing pretty quickly, although it's still pretty small. Not all creators are going to be able to get people to buy from it, right? There's different kinds of creators. Some creators are really media-driven. They're really all about getting the views, and that then leads to brand deals and ad revenue and that kind of thing. But it's harder for them to sell stuff, membership transactions, courses, whatever. Likewise, for me, I'm never going to reach a mass market. I'm never going to have a million followers or 10 million followers. But my followers are people who are decision makers, who control budgets, who are investing in themselves or their businesses. And so those people are willing, because they're willing to invest in themselves and their businesses, they're willing to transact on the things that I'm selling, whether it's, coaching and consulting or my news.
And you said, each creator is different, right? So we discussed about the distribution, the income, and the last one is also longevity, right? And there are different type of creators there. The ones that have one format that's been working all the time, others that change it depending on the trend. Some others do a little bit of a mix, right? They have something that is like their format, and then every week they do something a bit more trending just to be on the For You page, for example, on TikTok. And they always like, how long will this last? Is it like my career for the future, or is it just like a phase? What is also your input on that?
With this one, it's like, we don't know right now. I mean, it's creator economy is young. I mean, it's like, 10, 15 years old. There are certainly creators who have had a career as a creator and are no longer creators, who have gone back to the 9-to-5 and maybe are using some of the skills that they had as creators or they gained as creators to then work full time. There's other creators who maybe had really big careers, made a lot of money, and then, kind of faded a bit, but still have like a core audience, and they're just kind of coasting on that audience. So, but what's it going to be for the, now there's, 50 million creators out there? Like, what's it going to be for, let's say that a million of them are full-time. It's a lot of people to eventually have to figure out what to do with their lives. I don't know what the answer to that is. It's something that keeps me up at night, honestly, is like, I don't think I would, this is like a lifelong career for me. Mm-hmm. I do see it as like a waypoint. What is it, a waypoint to? I don't know.
And on these, since again, you spoke with content creators, you're really active in the industry. I also would like to know from you, what did you learn so far that maybe people don't really know about the creator economy? There are most probably either data insights or things like behind the scene that people do not know or do not realize that they exist. And the second question also is like, are there any myths about the creator economy that people either just like blab about because they heard it from someone but are like not really the case? So like what did you learn so far, again, that maybe is not really super, shared publicly? And then yes, like, is there anything that is like you just read about many times is like, oh, actually that's not really true about this economy?
I think the biggest one that kind of answers both questions, right, is like the idea that like creators are a monolith. I think a lot of people like try to profile creators, but like creators are as varied and diverse as like humanity, right?
Yeah.
And I think 10 years ago, even 5 years ago, actually was a fair point. Like creators largely were like a certain type, certain demographic, like with some variation, they tended to skew younger, they tended to be like video or audio creators, they were doing it more for like entertainment purposes with some educational, but like post COVID, when a huge number of like actual grown-ups, as I like to say, entered the creator economy, now there's creators of all ages, experience levels, and, of course, every other demographic factor you can think of. And so I think like companies, especially that are trying to appeal to all creators, are probably going to fail at that. I think like now more than ever, it's important to pick a segment, pick a niche, and go after that segment and niche. because, like, even, you know, three creators who make the same kind of content, like gaming content, can monetize completely differently. You can have people, you can have gaming content creators who monetize primarily through live streaming and the tipping and subs from that. You can have gaming creator who monetizes primarily through YouTube ad sets. You can have a gaming creator who monetizes primarily through brand deals. And like, they can all be playing the same game. So, you know, segmenting and picking creators and figuring out, all right, the creators that I'm going after are this demographic, making this type of content, monetizing in this way, have this kind of audience who are engaged in this, like understanding the sort of fragment of the overall ecosystem that you're going after is super key. And for creators, like understanding what your audience is and what they care about and what your how your content works and how your content is distributed and like figuring out the right model is more important than trying to just like be like everyone else, because there is no everyone else.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, I mean, like exactly, like brands should really look at these with a granular view, right? Like before 10 years ago, it was like influencers, this thing. Right now, there is like content creators and yeah, I agree. Like, you know, certain brands still look at them as this entity without realizing there are so different niches, different ways to, you know, like really approach, right? Brand deals, collaborations, co-creation of products and services, and so on. And on that, especially because, you know, of course, anytime that even if social media now has different ranges of like ages, still the ones that really understand the majority, right, of not only how social media work, but also the brand values, if they are aligned with them, is mostly Gen Z and some part of millennials, right? And still on your LinkedIn, you also said something that got my interest and wanted to know you to elaborate a bit more on that. It says that convenience is the number one decision driver for Gen Z and millennials. What does that mean for you? Like, is it about, again, like, you know, features for certain type of, like, you know, brands? Or what does it mean for that? And is it something that you think is going to, like, stay and is going to be becoming more important? Or is it also like that, like a phase, because there are so many options that you have to select which one you want to use?
Yeah, I think it's exactly what you just said. I think there's so many options out there, and like it's not just options for like what platform or tool to use for whatever, but also like what you could be doing at any given time, what you should be doing and thinking about it, working on at any given time, like especially for creators, that convenience, whether it's convenience of access, convenience of use, is kind of like a way to cut through all that noise, right? Like in Gigi's case, you know, one big example for her was, you know, she just uses Google Drive for everything. Like, you know, she could use like Asana for project management and Dropbox for like file management, but like then she has to get all of those, pay for them, figure them out. You know, Google Drive comes with her email. Mm-hmm. You know, if her team already uses iMessage, why would she pay for Slack, right? Like, you can sell her all day on how Slack is much better for managing threads and having different groups of people and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, it's all true. Mm-hmm. But, like, they can do what they need to do in iMessage. There's a great meme that Tejas Filler posted. I don't know. I hope I'm pronouncing his name right, by the way. That he posted, which was like kind of like it was like a bell curve, and like on the left it was kind of like, you know, a based guy kind of like looking derpy and like using notes, and in the middle is like somebody kind of like going, you know, going nuts trying to manage all the different tools like Airtable and Trello and Asana and, you know, Notion and this and that, and on the right it was like a galaxy brain guy using notes. And it's like, yeah, like it's fair. Like simplicity is elegance, right? Simplicity can be simplicity, but simplicity can also be elegance. And And I think like that's kind of what I mean by the whole convenience thing.
Yeah, no, it's funny that you said that, you know, refer to this meme, because what I think personally is that in the past 2-3 years, there have been a lot of creator platforms, right? And a lot of them, in my opinion, they try to solve a problem that doesn't exist. Like, it's really getting like on a fancier level, right, of a really nice interface for like payments, you know, brand deals management, and so on. But I think that sometimes we forget that a lot of these people are not professionals, or at least they started to understand what does it mean to manage their finances. And I do believe that if you ask them to go from one day to the other to a complex environment and ecosystem where, as you said, you have to link different things all together, you're going to find actually, I think, the counterproductive, right, for them. It's going to be like actually the opposite. It's going to be, why should I get into this and lose all this time, right, to connect things, making double of my time to invest into that when I can do it super easier and focus on creativity, getting a next video out, you know, and so on. And so I do believe that unless you're getting like really to a level where you have to, I also believe that the easier way, just like do something fast with the tools that you use, doesn't have to be fancy. If you use a Google Sheet that is well organized with a couple of formulas, right, that can make like things for you, that's it. Like, you don't need a super great interface, right, to do the same, right, or pay extra just for that. So I'm not saying that the tools out there are not like, you know, necessarily useful, but that sometimes you don't need to go necessarily pro just because, but you can start in a certain way, right? And then if you need to, right, upgrade to the system. And also like something I wanted to ask you just to change a bit, but it's still also something that you wrote about. It's the type of also of content, right? Because before we said about, you know, distribution, income and longevity, right? And all of these somehow go back to also what type of video or what type of content, right, that you should invest in. And nowadays there are like so many options, and every day there's a new feature, somebody is working, somebody that is not, you know, YouTube Shorts with a new found that is going so and so, TikTok did the same, but it's not, wasn't paying enough. The short, you know, video on demand, there are live streaming also. I know it's difficult to say because there is not like, you know, one fits for all, but what would you recommend right now? Is it a mix in your case? How you're approaching the type of content to invest in nowadays in 2023?
Well, yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I think it's about building a funnel if you can. You know, short form is great for discovery, terrible for monetization, and can actually cannibalize monetization. Long form is great for monetization. Okay for discovery, but like not nearly as fast, right? It's a grind. So if you can use short form to drive to long form,
mm-hmm.
you can go from, you know, 0 to 1 much faster than you could previously. And I think there is value in that. You know, the one area that I'm not that bullish on or not that big a fan of is live. I know there's people that love it, and I know that there is value to it, but it is just such a grind and so painful, and you have to do it for so long every day. And, you know, I think, and it contributes to tremendous amount of burnout for creators. And frankly, like, you know, the distribution of high earners to low earners is like much more uneven, on platforms like Twitch. Yeah, I just don't think that it's, I wouldn't invest in that.
What do you think about using live streaming to go back to what we were saying before about your stronger part of the community, right? So the people that really care about you. What do you think about
live? There.
Okay, like a little like
limited. Yeah, it's limited. Yeah, it's like, all right, if you're in my community, you're paying $100 a month or $10 a month or whatever it is. Yeah, then like I'll do a live stream, and if you want to watch it, you can, right? But like it's already monetized at that point. I would not use live streaming as a discovery and monetization mechanism, because it's just, you know, like, look, like the Twitch leak data is out there for everyone to go look at. And the reality is like, not that many people are making that much money.
Yeah, no, it's like the 1% makes the 99 or something like that, right? Like,
it's like the 0.001%. It's like, I think, like, you know, only a few hundred people, maybe a few thousand people are making six figures. And then the curve, this drop off is like very steep. The vast, vast majority of people are making like pennies. So you're just grinding for nothing. It's not, you know.
No, but again, I like the idea of the funnel, like as you said, right? Like you take the majority. So if you maybe could, like, you know, have as a vision, like you do short form for discoverability, right? You bring the people to your long form, and only those audience that get converted to a community, that community can potentially do a live, maybe as a subscription model, just like exclusive content or daily check-in, weekly check-in with your community, right? So maybe in this way, you can use a little bit of everything, but without having to use like live for discoverability or short for monetization, right? Each of them has a different use, a different scenario where, you know, you're going to be like, okay, in this strategy, in the 360, this is like how you're going to use it, right? So I think it's a good, you know, good advice, right? Like a piece of advice for people listening that are a bit confused sometimes, like, where should I go? There's so much, and they get like this paralysis almost, right? Type of thing. Yeah. And instead looking at the funnel, as you said before, I like the idea. And jumping also on something else, because again, I wanted to touch different things, you know, with you today, since again, you are really active on LinkedIn, and every day or every week, you come up with the different, you know, angles, right? And points to touch on, based on. And one also that got my interest, it's about the email outreach process, right? I still think that in the years, there has been so much, like, you know, discussion about how do you outreach, right? Both as a creator to get like brand deals, as a brand also to outreach, right? To also content creators and influencers. And you say that, you know, it should be simple, right? As a thing. So what are your top tips and tricks, right? And pieces of advices that you would recommend potentially if you have for both creators and also brands?
For reaching out to people and like doing cold outreach?
Yeah.
I would say keep it simple. Be direct. Don't be fluffy. Don't beat around the bush. I think it's important, one, to give like social proof, to make the ask quickly and like clearly, to give the context of like why you're asking for what you're asking for, and then to explain what they're going to get in exchange. If they're not getting anything in exchange, don't ask. It's a pain in the ass. No one wants that. So it's that simple, right? That could be a 4-sentence email. Like, I'm Avi and I have a newsletter where I have a top voice on LinkedIn. You know, my posts reach 5,000 plus people, and 25% of them are, I'll write one now. Alessandro. Hey, Alessandro. I'm Avi, and I'm a top voice on LinkedIn with my posts reaching 5,000 people, 25% of whom are CEOs, founders, and owners of creator economy companies. I would love to be on your podcast. I'm promoting my newsletter, and I think your audience is perfect for what I'm writing about, which is the creator economy and how creators make decisions. In exchange, I'd be willing to post any, short form videos or content that makes sense and is interesting for my audience that comes out of it to that audience. Thanks so much, and let me know. That's 4 sentences, like intro for it. It's like, hi, 4 sentences. Thank you.
Absolutely. Yeah. Sometimes again, like, you know, people think that maybe too much about it, but what I say all the time, it is that even in that B2B, behind the B2B, there is almost a human being, right? So think about like what that person would like to receive. Something corporate, you know, of course it depends by the situation, but especially between human beings, like creators and brands and so on, or even between creators, you should always, right, highlight the fact that you are a person, right? And with certain values, certain interests. And as you said, like presentation, this is who I am. This is how I can help. This is why we should do it together. Thank you for letting me know, right? So something easy, right? And do you think that, I have a question for you, this, would you have yourself, like, you know, looking at AI to write in these emails? Because I know that you have an unpopular opinion about that. So I want to know, do you write all your emails, or do you see yourself with the AI writing some emails for you?
I do currently. I mean, maybe in the future, if I have a template and an AI can just fill in the dots, if I was to do like outbound at scale, I would. Yeah, I mean, I think that like potentially like using AI for that could be valuable if you give them the template. And you know, one of the problems with ChatGPT right now is that it's not connected to the internet, so like it can't actually do research for you. So like, I can't be like, hey, I need one or like the 50 podcasts in the that talk about creator economy that are that have released new episodes over the last 6 months, and can you send them an email with this form? Like, I can't do that right now. Maybe one day I'm sure I will be able to, and like that I think would be valuable, right? But that's not a creative thing, and like frankly I'm writing the template and I would give very limited things for them to fill it. I think AI is not valuable for creative.
Yeah, yeah. Also, because what you wrote, it was like generative AI is bad for creators and consumers, right? Is it because again, it's not really new things. It's like the sort of like, you know, repurposing the same over and over and over. Is that the case for you, or is this something different?
Yeah, I think that it's bad because it is. Yeah, it's repurposing its fluff, right? Like, I mean, we've all had this experience where like searching for something on Google and we get a bunch of pages that are like reviews of whatever, strollers or chairs. But like, it's just like a generic, like, you know, officechairreviews.com that was like clearly like made in a content factory to be SEO optimized. And like, all they are is just regurgitations of descriptions and reviews pulled straight from Amazon. That's what AI is going to do. AI can't test, you know, the secret lab chair. It can't sit in an air on, right? And so like, yeah, it's not generating new and useful information. It's simply aggregating and regurgitating information that's out there. And the problem is like, not all the information out there is good. Like, I don't trust Amazon reviews because like, it's easy to game. It's easy to hire people to do fake reviews. Lots of companies do that. And so like, I want someone who is an expert, you know, someone who is a, you know, spine doctor or a physical therapist to like sit in a bunch of office chairs and review their designs and tell me this is the most comfortable, this one has the best design for, you know, preventing back pain, blah, 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 right? ChatGPT can't do that. Mm-hmm. And it never will, at least until like, you know, there's a robot who can go sit in all the chairs.
Yeah, totally.
And will ChatGPT ever like be able to empathize with a parent who is like, or a potential parent who is like just trying to find the safest crib for their kid? Like, no, there's no empathy in AI. I'll go as far on a limb to say that I don't think there's much empathy from the people who make AI. I mean, like,
yeah. And not just like the empathy, but also like personal experiences, right? Like a machine right now is like mostly reading, right? But there is not a storytelling behind that. You know what I mean? Like,
right?
It's missing also that part. Like, yeah, after sitting on 40 different chairs in my life and in different part of the world, I'm able to say blah, blah, right? A machine, as you said, it doesn't have that. It doesn't even have an authority, right? As you said before, like a doctor started many years, right? Just to say like, this is good for your spine. So yeah, I think I agree on that. Like, I think there is so much hype. Everyone is talking about it. It's good for like, maybe, you know, as we said in other episode, to help you to get some ideas maybe. But I'm pretty sure that if everyone continues using like this in 1 year, we're going to have all these SEO optimized like articles. Nothing is going to go out.
It's going to be terrible.
It's going to be personalized. And you know, the one they're going to win.
And that's why it's bad for everyone.
It is. I think that it's bad for everyone, but it's really good for the people that are going to be willing to spend the time to go and buy 10 different shirts, review all of them, taking a picture on each of them with themselves on, right? And do a little video. Like back in the days, right? Like doing the first blogging type of thing, like really,
yeah,
you know, type of thing. And I'm pretty sure that people are going to love that type of content because of the plethora of AI-generated content. They're going to be the same copy-paste. And people, I'm pretty sure, are going to look for something that comes from a person even more. That's my opinion on that. I think that, you know, they're going to look for that type of content because after a while you realize that the same top 10 lists are the same overall, right? So, but apart from AI, and to start wrapping up the episode, is there anything else that excites you lately? Something that I didn't ask you today that are you either following or something that makes you like super, super pumped?
Well, so there's one thing I will say about AI. So I don't think generative AI is good. I think there is some value to, let's call it iterative AI or, like AI that is or recombinatory AI, let's say. Like, so for example, like there's a company called Super Creator that makes a tool that will, I haven't used it yet, but I am planning on it at some point, that will let me like copy paste my like LinkedIn post in, and it'll spit out like a script for a TikTok video, and then I can record the TikTok video, and it'll cut out all of the like gaps, so that it's like the right pacing, and like that's making the production process faster. And like I can make some of the tweaks on the creative, but like I've already done the writing, I've already done the actual creation. It's just like making that, like, you know, the process faster. Likewise, like I just saw yesterday a company called Opus posted about how they're launching a tool that will let you upload a long form video, like a podcast episode, and then it'll automatically like cut clips out for redistribution, like verticalized video and that kind of thing. Like that is great. I wish I had that 6 months ago when I was doing my Creators of Color podcast. Mm-hmm. Cause that would have helped a lot.
Yeah.
And so like using AI to do things that aren't necessary. Now, like, sorry, will that be good for picking which clips are actually going to go viral? I don't know. I'm skeptical, but maybe. And as long as you can take lots of swings, especially with short form video, like, having it do the work for you so you don't have to hire a editor, you don't have to like give notes, you don't have to do like, spend hours cutting it down, like that's valuable. So I think like using like machine learning and voice recognition and, you know, all of these new technologies that are coming out in combination to make the production process, especially for redistribution, for building that funnel, for like taking kind of the headache out of things that maybe aren't native or that necessary. Like Emma Chamberlain should never use AI for her editing, yeah. Or David Dobrik, or like these creators who are like artists, right? But like for me, if I ever make video, it's not going to be like, no one's going to judge it based on the quality of the editing. That's not like, I'm not like a filmmaker. They're going to judge my videos based on the quality of what I say and the ideas that I put forward. And so for me, AI would be helpful in making sure that I don't spend $800 a video or whatever editing. They just do it for me. And it takes 10 minutes instead of 10 days or whatever, right? So I think I think that's something that's pretty interesting.
Right. Editing and distribution, not generate content.
Yes.
Absolutely. And we do the same for the podcast. Like sometimes we use tools to enhance like the audio. We use some of them like tools to remove the like trimming like the spaces and the right out of from the video and so on. So absolutely. I see what you mean. Like again, a good help, but not necessarily like replacing, right? The human part, that is what create the hook, right? In the other human beings like listening, right? It's again, you know what could work. And I'm also interested to see like and last on this, we had an era of YouTube where everyone was creating content just to go on the discovery, right? But we found out there was a box, right? It was a sort of loop where you were copying the others just because it was going on the homepage, and you were mostly not doing any more content that you liked, but the content that you had to create. And you could see...
Well, that's exactly what happens on TikTok, yeah. Right? It's like everyone's trying to get on Fair Use. Everyone's just making the same shit off of the same sounds and...
Yeah. Oh, exactly. So
sometimes it works, but like, is that creatively fulfilling? Is that going to create longevity? Is that going to make you happy long run as a creator? Is it going to make your audience care about you? Like, do you really think that if you make every single video, every single one of your videos is just like whatever is trending right now, that your audience actually gives a shit about you at all? Because they don't. You're just like another, piece of noise in the trend. Like the things that people care about are the things that are different, that stop them in their day to day and that get them to come back over and over.
Totally.
And so like, yeah, maybe your follower numbers or your view numbers will grow faster, but like, are those people valuable at all? We're finding out though. Like we're literally seeing it in the conversion numbers, in the absurdly low ad rates on YouTube shorts, right? Like, wait, okay. 2 cents to 6 cents CPM, that is 100 times lower than what Spotify pays per stream. Mm-hmm. That's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So like, is it really worth it? It's worth it if you're able to funnel them to something that is different and valuable.
No, totally. I mean,
And rants.
Yeah, no. But no, you're right. I mean, like we have been seeing that and been seeing a lot that a lot of TikTokers are almost commodities, right? You can exchange them quickly and you will forget their name the same day, right? Because again, they don't have really a character online, they don't have a personas, but they jump on everything. And that is really like when you have like the burn rate that goes higher and higher, because every day you have to come up with something just to, you know, get on the For You page. But people don't really follow you because of you, right? But because of the entertainment that you're giving, but they're not really, again, you have an audience potentially, not really people that are interested in that. And we saw it back in the days with Bitcoin, with a lot of TikTokers not really getting any fans physically there for them, you know? So I'm pretty interested to see also what is going to happen with the YouTube Shorts. I don't know if it's going to be the same or similar, but potentially.
I think it's already.
Yeah. You think so? Okay. Fantastic. Well, Avi, thank you so much for joining me today. I can see that you are really passionate about all these, and thank you for sharing more about also the breakdown, right? I think it's time to go in details, right? So we're going to also put the link to your, tell me again the name, Creator Logic, is that the...
Creator Logic, yes. And I like that you said time to go to detail, because like that, for me, that has been something that I always care about, is like going into detail. Like the high level stuff is
yes,
it's the details that are hard and that like you need to understand if you really want to understand. Like if you understanding at a high level how something works isn't actually understanding how it works. So my hope is that Creator Logic can help you understand creators by getting into the nitty-gritty about how, like, from creators' mouths, how they're making their decisions and why.
Fantastic. I already subscribed on that, so can't wait to see the next
Thank you. I appreciate
it. And then the issues to go out. So thank you again, Avi, for joining me. This was The Influence Factor by The Influencer Marketing Factory. And I'm going to see you next week.